Welcome to Branching Out, Growing Together, the podcast that brings you inspiring stories from people ready to take bold steps, grow new opportunities, and transform their land or careers into something extraordinary. Hosted by Melanie Jones, each episode features farmers, entrepreneurs, and visionaries sharing their journeys of discovery and growth. Whether you're dreaming of starting your own farm or looking for new ways to cultivate success, you're in the right place. It's time to branch out and grow together.
Hi, all. This podcast is a special one because we're diving into the topic of supply chain with an expert who also happens to be a chestnut farmer, Sandy Russell. Sandy is a senior technology and supply chain leader with over 25 years of experience building and scaling global platforms across supply chain, merchandising, and decision support systems. She spent the majority of her career at Walmart, leading large-scale supply chain and digital transformation initiatives across international markets. Today, Sandy and her husband Brad operate a chestnut farm in the Ozarks, where she is applying enterprise supply chain principles to build a specialty, perishable food crop movement centered around what is still a relatively undiscovered fruit in America. When we talk about supply chain, we're really talking about the story of how something moves from the ground to the hands of the customer. It's the invisible network of people, processes, and technology that brings products to life, connecting growers to markets, building trust, and keeping value flowing in the right direction. And for an emerging crop like chestnuts, learning to design that system is one of the biggest opportunities in front of us. As we look ahead, supply chain development is becoming one of the most important frontiers for the chestnut industry, something growers, processors, and partners will need to better understand, explore, and actively build in the years to come. I am so confident that as a community, we can do this. And I feel this way because we have so many smart and talented individuals, like Sandy, who can help navigate the way forward.
From the bottom of my heart, thank you for sharing your expertise with us on a very big topic that's important to the chestnut industry right now, and that, of course, is supply chain.
Yeah, good morning. I'm glad to be here. Thanks for the invite, Melanie.
Absolutely. You've been on the podcast before with your husband, Brad, but this is a whole nother topic. And so appreciate it. So I prepared a couple of questions for you. And it's my hope by the end of the podcast that the chestnut community will really have a better idea of how complex supply chain is and some of the things that we'll need to tackle to keep up with the explosive growth in the industry.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay.
Looking forward to it.
Good. So I'm just going to read my questions because you're an expert at this and I'm not. So,
sure. No worries.
Well, I've known you for a while and I know that you've spent years managing global enterprise platforms across fulfillment and inventory for international markets.
Yes.
And so from your view at the very top of the supply chain, what is the specific operational breaking point that niche industries like the chestnut hit right before they successfully scale into a national category?
Yeah, no, great question. I would say, Melanie, this one is, it can be complicated, but let's simplify it today. Honestly, the breaking point really, it's not the crop itself. It's really around the operations behind the crop. So I've watched this happen over and over in global type supply chains. It's a common theme for many products, whether it's live food crops or startups selling new ideas. A niche product like a chestnut gets popular, let's say like it's popular in Asia and Europe currently. Demand starts building, everyone gets excited, and then the system behind it isn't really ready to support it. That's where you start seeing cracks. So the moment that you move from a great product to a reliable supplier, the expectations change. They change overnight.
Yeah.
Buyers don't just want quality. They want consistency. They want predictability. And they want the ability to deliver every single time without drama. No matter what's going on around them, they expect the same results. So I would say for small industries, the breaking point is when they realize that growing the product was, I'm not sure, 10% or however large that number is. I think it's a greater, it's a great number, percentage of work that the farmers do. But another big portion outside the farm work is really around the cold chain. It's around grading standards, packaging, forecasting, traceability, and being able to ship on time, even when things go wrong. So that's where industries either grow or they stall. It's not a farming issue. It's an operational maturity issue.
Yeah, for sure. It makes the buyers and the retailers, let's say, look pretty bad if an organization says they're going to do something and then they can't deliver.
Right. And, you know, when you go to a buyer and you speak to a buyer about your product, they're assuming that everything down chain is, it's done. You have it all figured out. But obviously, they're not going to just trust, but they will verify and make certain that you don't look their you don't want to make their company look like they're unreliable, because it's not the farmer that people will accuse of not being able to have their product. They're going to accuse the retailer.
Oh, absolutely. And disappoint customers at the end of the day, you know. So you and your,
So I would say that, you know, it's important that we all work together on this problem, because this is an operational maturity issue, not by farmer, by the industry of chestnuts.
Yes. There's lots to do. And one of the reasons I was excited to talk to you is that I know that you and your team have modernized ecosystems to maintain that always on operations, as they call it. So my question is, for the chestnut industry to succeed in becoming a major supplier to retailers, what is the one service and resiliency expectation that usually crushes small producers who just aren't really ready for the big leagues?
That's a good one. I would say, I think you touched on it, right? Is always on operations. That's the expectation. So hands down, Melanie, service reliability is super important. And that's not a negotiable. It is something that is a must have, and it cannot be overlooked. So retailers today, I mean, they can handle small volumes. They can even handle high cost. What they cannot handle is unpredictability. If you commit to shipping on a Tuesday, it has to ship on Tuesday. If you say the product will arrive cold and graded in a certain way, it has to arrive that way every single time. Small producers often underestimate the resiliency piece. It's in big supply chains, in big retail supply chains, there's always a backup plan. If a truck breaks down, there's another one. If a pallet fails inspection, there's a replacement inventory. If weather hits, there's a contingency for that. So most small growers don't have redundancy built in. And that's really what crushes them. One bad week, one failed shipment, one quality issue, and suddenly the buyer loses confidence. It's not that the product wasn't good. It's that the system around it wasn't resilient enough to recover. So scaling isn't about being perfect. It's about being reliable, even when things go sideways.
That is awesome. And how many chances does a supplier get?
You got a chance. You got one chance.
Yeah.
But if they start losing trust, they're assuming that that particular instance is not going to go away. is going to continue, and they don't want to put their name on the line for a farmer that is not reliable.
Yeah, absolutely. I know that there's discussions in the chestnut community right now about how to talk to each other during the time of harvest and shipping and this and that, so that we are creating some redundancy. There's a lot of work to do, and we'll talk a little bit more
agreed.
about that. But
sure.
great perspective.
Yeah.
So I'm a big fan of kind of looking back at the pistachio industry. I'm not the only one, but there's a lot of research that shows that the U.S. pistachio industry nearly destroyed itself in the beginning because they tried to aggregate the crop before they had uniform standards. We absolutely see that right now in the chestnut industry. So, you know, one grower's failure can become everybody's loss, and we can't have that, especially if you're representing yourself to national retailers.
Absolutely.
So you've managed global supply chains. Is this operational breaking point inevitably where niche industries crash, or is there a way to scale without hitting that wall, so to speak?
Yeah, absolutely. I would say aggregation itself isn't the problem, Melanie. Blind aggregation is, though. What killed early pistachio efforts, it wasn't scale.
Yeah.
It was a lack of standards and a
Mm-hmm.
lack of visibility. If one grower's crop has quality issues, per se, and you mix it with everyone else's, you've just spread risk across the entire system.
Yep.
I've seen it. I've seen this in enterprise supply chains as well. If you don't have uniform standards, clear grading, and data transparency before you scale, you create a hidden risk. And hidden risk always shows up eventually, but probably you're usually not at the right time, usually at the worst time.
Yeah,
So,
right at the worst time.
exactly. So you can scale without crashing, don't get me wrong, but you have to build the operational discipline first. Uniform standards, clear specs, traceability, accountability. If you don't know exactly what's coming in, aggregation becomes liability. So scale only works when standards come first.
Yes. And I mean, we know that the chestnut industry is working through this as some of the co-ops continue to expand and new growers come into them. And, you know, the aggregation point is very different than someone just selling their own
Agreed.
product. And that's where we have to go. I know that. So let's see. Oh, I know. I part of this question too is, are we wasting time trying to aggregate before we have visibility?
Right. I think that particular question, I mean, we really need to be honest with ourselves about this. If we aggregate before we have visibility into quality, moisture levels, for example, cold chain integrity, and grading consistencies, we're creating a risk that someone will eventually have to absorb.
Yeah.
In big retail supply chains, data isn't optional. It's how you manage risk. If you can't measure it, you cannot scale it. So aggregation without visibility just shifts the risk to whoever is doing the handling. And if that handler can't control the variability, they eventually get squeezed financially and their reputation as well.
Yeah.
So the real question isn't like, should we aggregate? It's, are we operationally ready to aggregate? Those two, I would say, are very two different questions.
Yeah. So you've led transformations that had to happen in, say, 3 years instead of 40. You kind of have a little purview into where we're headed with this. So your knowledge sharing with us is important. It's kind of a wake-up call, I think, for the industry to grow. Another question is, I know that you and your teams have partnered with merchandising leaders to build pricing and replenishment platforms. And you know how that big machine can squeeze the cost out of the system, right? So when we talk about this idea of keeping wealth on the farm, Yes. Where is the specific leak in the traditional supply chain where growers are losing money to middlemen?
Yeah, that's a that's
That's a
pretty
big
common.
question. Yeah.
That is. It's a and it's a big one, yeah, to answer. I would say the biggest leak is between the farm gate and the shelf. And it's usually tied to information asymmetry. So the middle layers, like you asked me, the middle layers often control the pricing visibility, grading standards across the I would say across the field to the buyer. If the grower doesn't understand how pricing, shrinkage, handling cost, and service expectations are structured downstream, you're going to be negotiating blindly.
Yeah.
So in large systems, pricing gets squeezed through data, forecast accuracy, fill rate, for example, service level, rejection rates. Those metrics, they drive these conversations. So if we're wanting to keep the money with the farmer, we have to be knowledgeable about this information. You cannot go in blindly to
Yeah.
negotiate. If growers do not control quality, consistency, and service performance, someone else will control the margin. So let's not pass off this margin. Let's keep the margin with the farms.
Yes.
So really, the leak isn't the evil middleman right here. It's lack of leverage. And leverage comes from standards, from data, and most important, reliability.
Yeah, that is great. And we get busy on our farms and
Yes.
forget how important data is into almost everything in our society right now.
That's right.
And I think a lot of farmers, that's not their thing. And so
Right, right.
it's up to community leaders like yourself
Right, right.
and
And you know,
others.
if you think about something that is really hot topic right now is AI,
Yep.
artificial intelligence. And artificial intelligence, the way it runs, it's by data. The more data it has, the more knowledge it can actually spit out to you, as a user of AI.
Yeah. I mean, we think we'll see so many exciting things coming to this
Yes.
really baby industry that we're in.
Right.
And it's
Yeah.
fun. I think it's fun and a privilege to play a role for, I mean, this is just a little off topic, but both of us left really great jobs for our
Yes.
farms to play a role in bringing this industry back.
That's right. That's right.
So let's go back to the pistachios for a second. So we know that chestnuts are even less forgiving than pistachio and other nuts in general.
Yes.
They have a high moisture content and they're totally dependent on the cold chain. So how can we as an industry prepare small growers to prepare? And second part of that question is what are you and Brad doing on your farm?
Sure. Yeah, no, great question. So you're right. Chestnuts, the world that we live in today with chestnuts, they are unforgiving. That's just the reality of chestnuts. So the cold chain. So the cold chain is not optional. It is survival. Before I talk or go into the cold chains, I want to make sure that the audience is aware of a cold chain in a supply chain world. So our distribution centers are not all made equal. So there's different types. For example, you have an ambient, you have a refrigerated, you have climate control type specialty DCs. So the ambient DCs are really around your 60 to 75 degrees Fahrenheit, which is your dry typical cans, your refrigerated or chilled, which is where we come in, right? Is your 34 to 40, typically dairy, produce, deli. Those would be kept in those type of DCs. Frozen obviously is going to be 10 below, 10 to below zero. But where we play is really a perishable DC, and that's what we want to aim for. So perishable DCs, which means it's going to expire, they have limited shelf life, as you know. They do require controlled handling. What that means is they need to be refrigerated, chilled. They have a short life. They have faster turns. Cold chains have compliance. And then slotting complexity, temperature zones. Those things all exist within a perishable DC. And it's important for us who have that knowledge as we're going in to the discussions of the possibility to scale. So on our farm, Melanie, we focus on handling disciplinarily. So post-harvest, for example, you want to look at your cooling speed, your moisture management, and clear grading standards before anything leaves the property. So even at a small scale, we're practicing like we're already bigger. Yeah. Because those are disciplines that you have to master. And it's important as a small farmer that you start marrying and incorporating this into your everyday farming life. You know, I would say small growers need to think in terms of process. So not just the product itself of a chestnut, they need to think about the process. So what that means is when you're looking at process, you're looking at, for example, defined harvest to cooling times. Another process would be clear moisture thresholds, your standardized packaging, your backup storage plans. So you don't have to have Walmart volume type discipline, right? That's a whole new level. But you do need to build Walmart discipline into your small farm today. And the sooner the better, honestly.
Yeah, and we have to help as an organization, we have to help the small farmers, you know, to align on that. I think another one that's important is shipping. I mean, I know I've seen chestnuts shipped through the USPS, which is unpredictable. That's not cool. So
you're absolutely right.
Well, and then this is kind of a good follow-up question. How do we organize independent growers with protocols that create speed rather than bureaucracy and kill that entrepreneurial spirit? You know, I think so many of our customers are getting into the chestnut growing business because they love being an entrepreneur. I do. You all do. So how do we organize without killing that spirit of why we started in the first place?
So I would say this is where we can either get smart or we can get stuck. Protocols should reduce friction, not add to it. So the goal isn't really around paperwork. The goal is clarity. Every grower knows the grading standard, the moisture threshold, the cooling requirements, packaging specs. In Walmart DCs, we have a tool that it's a third party mechanism that we purchased called CubaScan, for example. And those type of machines, it's not just a tool, it's a machine, that allows us to have consistent scan across all packaging. Because you don't want one farmer's package where they ship, let's say they ship 100 nuts to a customer and they have a box size that fits a TV. And then you have another farmer that has 100 nuts, but they have a box size, you know, that fits a few garments. That's consistency that we need to build across the organization. So the aggregation becomes faster, not slower. So I would say bureaucracy really happens when rules are unclear or consistency keeps changing. So speed happens when expectations are consistent and they're transparent. So entrepreneurs don't hate standards. They hate confusion.
Yeah, this is good. It's absolutely. So if you were advising a chestnut farmer that has, say, a 10-acre farm, how to look like a sophisticated vendor to a premium buyer, let's say, what is the one operational change that they likely need to make this season?
Yes, well, that's a good one. So if we, just to ensure that I'm clear on this one, so you want to appear as a sophisticated vendor to a premium buyer. So let's say Whole Foods, for example, as a premium buyer. So I'd start with standards, not scale, not marketing, but standards. Before we talk about national distribution, we need to have shared expectations around grading, moisture, cooling timelines. I've said this before, packaging.
Yes.
If those are not consistent, nothing downstream works smoothly.
Yeah.
After that, once you get that, I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, I was saying,
okay,
yes,
so
ma'am.
After you get that, right, mastered, and you cannot be okay, you have to be a master at this. After that, that's when, you start building a small but disciplined network. So a handful of growers who are aligned on process and willing to operate with consistency. So you're not looking at, let's say, for example, 200 different growers, 200 different farmers to start. You get maybe around 10 different farms who can deliver reliability. So I layer that in visibility. Simple data points, harvest timing, storage conditions, basic quality metrics. Nothing overcomplicated, just enough to understand what's happening across the network, right? Visibility. So
yeah.
If you build discipline first, scale comes naturally. If you chase scale first, you spend years fixing problems downstream.
Mm-hmm.
So what I mean by shared expectations is that every grower needs to know what good looks like before the product ever leaves the farm. For example, grading.
Mm-hmm.
We'd all be using the same best basic size, basic, quality categories. So if a buyer says that they want large premium chestnuts, that means the same thing to every single farmer it's coming from.
Yeah.
Whether it's from Arkansas, Missouri, Michigan, Ohio, you don't want one farm calling something premium and another calling that same size as standard. That really creates friction immediately.
It does, and it's a conversation that continues to come up. And I think the beautiful thing about the industry is that many understand this is where we're at, and it's time to fix it. And I just wanted to put a plug in because I recently joined the board of Chestnut Growers of America, and I agreed to do so if I could have a role of growth. And so we see this next chapter as building a real industry-wide standard, like you've just talked about this whole time, so that we can function like a real industry in the United States. And I think that there's an urgency to it, because if growers don't come together and create these standards, and you've alluded to this, someone else absolutely will, and the time is now. So if I ask you, how can organizations like Chestnut Growers of America prepare to support this industry growth and connect consumers and growers, which is at the end of the day, that's what the real goal is, right? What ideas do you have on that?
Let me put this in perspective. So actually, before I go to that, I want to say, Melanie, the time when you said the time is now, the time has been now for a long time. So now is in the past. We need to take advantage, and we need to move, and we need to move quickly. Is what now means. And I would say what now means, when you say now, that's what now means.
Yes.
So for organizations like Chestnut Growers of America, to support growth, right, is, so let me start with this. So the boom collapse cycle usually comes from excitement, outrunning infrastructure. So let's say a product gets attention, demand spikes, everyone rushes in, but the system behind it, for example, cold chain handling, standards, distribution, they aren't mature yet. So quality varies, buyers lose confidence, momentum stalls. To avoid that, growth has to be intentional. It's okay to grow slower if it means growing stronger.
Definitely.
Every new acre planted should come with an understanding of how that crop will be handled, stored, and delivered. If big chains, we talk about controlled growth. Not if big chains, in big chains, we talk about controlled growth. expand only as fast as your systems can support. That's the mindset that applies here.
Yeah, and that would that be like instead of overstating, say quantity, the industry as a whole, just slow down a little bit, make sure
slow
the
down. It's
standards,
okay.
qualities,
Yeah, absolutely.
Sell other nuts somewhere else aside from representing to national
So,
partners.
yeah, I would say where CGA or Chestnuts Growers of America, I would say the opportunity is to help build that foundation. So I would put that on the Chestnut Growers of America, which that means defining clear standards, helping growers understand handling, quality expectations, creating stronger connections between growers and buyers. So demand and supply, they're aligned.
Yeah.
That's how you turn growth into something sustainable, not just a temporary momentum. We want to keep that momentum and we want to keep it going. So that's how you turn growth into something, like I said, something sustainable. So we must not rely on our emotion, or that's just the way it's always been done, thinking we will not scale that way. It will hold the industry back. And I think Chestnut Growers of America can play a big part in this to really build that foundation and allow the chestnuts to really grow as much as they want to. They can really help with that.
Yeah. And I want the listeners to know that the wheels are already turning. There's some really exciting things coming down the pike here. And we want to see the membership grow by leaps and bounds and have the resources to support the community. And that is a great
That's
answer.
fantastic.
And I'm really excited about it. Just a couple more questions. So say the gap between a 10-acre orchard and a Walmart shelf, you've said this, it isn't the nut. In a lot of times it's the paperwork. And you've built compliance engines, which I'm not even 100% sure what that is, but is it possible for a small grower to survive this type of paperwork alone, or should we be looking towards CGA chestnut co-ops growth that way instead of 500 independent chestnut growers?
Sure. So the boom and the bust cycle usually happens when excitement gets ahead of the systems, right? Needed to support it. So demand shows up, people rush in, but the handling, storage, and standards aren't quite there yet. So then quality starts to vary by buyers. And then buyers will lose confidence and the things slow down. So for growers, that can be frustrating because you're doing the hard work of producing, which is hard work.
It is.
To produce great crop. But the rest of the system isn't always set up to support you. So that's where organizations like Chestnut Growers of America can really help. They can take some of the guesswork out of by really helping define really what good looks like with, what do things look like? How the product should be handled after harvest, what quality standards buyers are expecting, how to think about storage timing. They can help growers navigate the compliance side, which is where a lot of people get stuck. So food safety, for example, traceability, basic documentation. Those things are required if you want to move into larger markets.
Yes,
but
and,
they,
and other products too, right? Like
oh,
some
yeah.
other chestnut products.
Sure. It can feel overwhelming, Melanie. I mean,
Oh, I
when
know.
You're doing it all on your own, especially as a farmer with one farm on a 10-acre lot, that's a lot of work.
Yeah, it is. Because chestnut farming is a lot of work. I mean, there is so much enthusiasm and capital and expansion happening, and it's fantastic and it's necessary, but it's also, it's a lot of work. And we know that we see the day to day. So
absolutely. Yeah. And to wrap up this topic, if there's a way to simplify that, even support in a shared way, for example, it takes a lot of pressure off individual growers and makes it more realistic to scale, whether you're an independent grower or you're running in a cooperative type model. So they help connect growers to each other. So you're not fighting everything out alone, and connect growers to buyers, and so that you understand what the market actually needs. Honestly, at the end of the day, it's about helping growers move from just producing a crop to operating as part of a system.
Yes.
When that happens, things become more predictable, and it gets a lot easier to grow in a way that actually lasts as a farmer or as a co-op.
Yeah. I love it. I mean, we could talk for hours. I guess I'll put a plug here too for the Chestnut Growers of America and Northern Nut Growers Conference in
Yes.
end of July, first week of August, in Amherst, Massachusetts. We need everyone's ideas, and
we do.
I think we're working on a 5-year strategic plan for Chestnut Growers of America, and we need input. So I guess let's wrap with this question for you.
Sure.
What's a final thought you'd want our listeners to remember from this conversation?
Yeah. And just what you just said is, I want to make sure that everybody understands that scaling is not a niche crop. It isn't just about planting more trees, but it's about building the system around those trees. If we stay disciplined on quality, on handling, and how we work together, this opportunity is real, Melanie. We can actually make the chestnut a pistachio, like a pistachio is known today.
I know. That's why we can't sleep at
that's
night,
the
Sandy.
goal, right? So I would say, So I would say one thing is, let's not agree to disagree. No, we cannot have that. Is where we're all doing different things and we're all having different standards of our own. Let's agree to a standard. There is no let's disagree to agree and then everybody does their thing. No, let's agree to agree. And this is the standard that we're going to go off of. And
I
somebody
love it.
needs to create that standard. And I do think it comes from organizations like yourselves, Melanie, to help create that standard across the board.
Well, that's fantastic. You know, one of the main missions of United Chestnuts is to provide education. It started with our clients, and now it's becoming more of an industry. And that means conversations with experts like you. And I really appreciate you taking the time to join in and hopefully play an even stronger role in expanding Chestnut Growers of America.
Absolutely. I help where I can.
Yes. So thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for listening to Branching Out, Growing Together. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe for more inspiring stories and expert tips. Join us next time and keep branching out.